This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this March. Breakdowns of every region and every game, who are the Cinderellas, and which team's cutting down the nets. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcasts.
2-2, swung on and missed. He struck him out. Went with the changeup. That was such a good pitch for Skeens as the year went on. He's already got his first strikeout of 2025. Here's a 2-2 to Stowers. He could not hold up. And he's down on strikes. Back-to-back strikeouts for Paul Skeens. Swing and a miss. Another strikeout for Skeens. That's four through two innings. Six up, six down for Paul Skeens to the third on opening day. No score on the Pirates Radio Network. Swing and a miss. Struck him out. Came inside with a fastball. Skeens with his fifth strikeout of the day. But the Marlins with the first run. Through three, 1-0 Miami. Swing and a miss. Struck him out. Went with the heat. Threw it right by him. Six strikeouts for Paul Skeens. 3-2. Swing and a miss. Struck him out. Paul Skeens, strikeout number seven. Bases loaded. 3-1 on Brian Reynolds. And the pitch. Swing and a line drive up the middle. Base hit. Here comes Hayes to score. Kiner Falefa's on his way home. He'll score. The throw comes into third. Two out. Two-run single. Brian Reynolds and the Pirates have the lead. 2-1. Swing, fly ball, left field, deep. Stowers back, turns around. There it goes. Line drive, home run, Nick Gonzalez. And he's pulling up at first base. He is slow to trot around. I think he hurt his leg.
I think and he did too.
Nick Gonzalez is homered and can barely get around the bases. Swing and a liner up the middle. Base hit. Dane Myers just tied the game. Hung a slider, hit it up the middle, 4-4. Lined to right to the corner, fair by a foot, Marlins win. Kyle Stowers lines a single to the right field corner. Sanoja scores. Pirates hang their heads and get walked off in Miami. 5-4 Marlins win on opening day.
Well, here we go on another Pirates season. A pretty familiar-looking Pirates loss, if you ask me. And I don't want to overreact after just one game, but that is a very frustrating way to start. And I thought Dan Zangrilli said it well last night on his post-game coverage, unless I heard him wrong. It didn't feel like game one of 2025. It felt like game 163 of 2024. A waste of a decent, not great, Paul Skeens start. A failure to come up with the timely hits. Multiple physical and mental errors in the field. And the bullpen goes down in flames. It's the Pomp and Joe show on 93.7 The Fan, but no Pomp or Joe. Donnie Chedrick with you until 2. Austin Bechtold is with me behind the glass. Pomp not usually in on Fridays, so this is no different for him. And you might be able to get used to this, but the weather is going to start getting nicer. It's a Friday. You can probably guess what Joe Starkey is up to right now. You think that's fair to say, Austin?
Oh, I think it's easy to say. He's either right now on the beach with Ron, walking around, paying off the visit that he said he might make to Ron, or he is just about to get onto the golf course after a nice breakfast.
But hey, more for you and me.
Let's roll.
Let's do this thing, Limits. A fun show ahead. We will start with the Buccos, and I want to hear from you on that at 412-928-9370. After the boys went down yesterday to open the 25 campaign, We'll talk a little college hoops. The first set of Sweet 16 matchups last night, another set of them tonight. The big news that came out of the area earlier this week with a team that made the NCAA tournament. Sidney Crosby made some history last night. That's just about the only good thing happening in Pittsburgh sports right now. We continue to wait on Aaron Rodgers and the new wrinkles that continue to get tossed into that story. Ray Fittipaldo at 11, you know him. Bob Walk at 1, his first visit with us this season, and that should be a fun one following what happened yesterday afternoon in Miami. Joe Smeltzer joins us around 1:30. Joe is a Penn State reporter. He is at Penn State's Pro Day today. And how could I forget a Bechtold breakdown at 12:30? Off the top, that's presented by JP Roofing and Siding. And you just heard of what is going to happen on today's show. But again, we start with the Pirates today. And I'll put the number out there again at 412-928-9370. You heard the highlights and the lowlights to open today's show. Marlins 5, Pirates 4. It was an exciting game like that last season as well, if you recall. The Pirates opened in Miami to start the season pretty much the same time and place, the final Thursday in March. A 4-10 first pitch. The Pirates, however, the team that battled back and got the exciting extra innings victory against the Fish to open the 24 season. Not the case yesterday. When Paul Skeens exited the game, it was 4-1, and he wasn't at his very best. It was start one, it was game one, and I understand that that can be held for a lot of the people I am going to talk about here in this opening salvo, but Paul Skeens was still good enough to win the game. He left after 5 1/3. He got charged for a second run. He had 7 strikeouts. He walked a pair, 94 pitches for the big guy on opening day, 64 of them for strikes. It's hard to look at that game and really fault Skeens, because if any other pitcher gives the Pirates that effort, we're thinking to ourselves, all right, that's a pretty good start. Like Austin, I think if tonight we see Mitch Keller pretty much give the same line as Paul Skeens, he pitches into the 6th inning, he allows 2 runs, a couple of hits, he strikes out 7, he walks a couple of guys, we're thinking, all right, that's pretty good for start one.
Yeah, I mean, we look at Skeens through a completely different lens than we look at everyone else. Like, Skeens can allow 1 run in a game and be like, oh, not that great of a Paul Skeens start. He allowed 1 run over 6 innings. He's completely judged on a much bigger scale.
Yeah, that's what's tough with him. The expectation is just sky high. And I think in this case it is fair. Sometimes with the other athletes in this city and some of the other athletes on the Pirates roster, we set the bar a little bit too high. I feel like we have maybe done that with O'Neill Cruz over the last couple of seasons, waiting for him to become a 40-40 type player, and I just don't know if that's ever in the cards for him. Maybe. I mean, I would love to see that, but that's the type of thing I'm saying there. With Skeens, we saw what he did when he came onto the scene as a rookie. He was easily the National League Rookie of the Year. He was a finalist for the Cy Young. And I think the guy will win the Cy Young this season, and I'm not going to walk back on that after just one start, because I still thought he was pretty good, not great, not the unhittable Paul Skeens in the very first start of the season. But the way his effort was followed up is already a concerning look for what is behind him. We had a feeling that some of those arms in the bullpen would be an issue this season, and that is already the case, one game in. And like I said, I understand it's the first game for everybody, but a couple of those guys, the ones that you put in the highest of high leverage situations, they are the ones that look like they did for either all of or at least some of 2024. I'm not really here to attack Dennis Santana or Ryan Borucki or Caleb Ferguson, because beyond two walks from Santana and a passed ball courtesy of Joey Bart, those guys were pretty clean in the job they did. But it felt like, and maybe it's just me, and Austin can correct me if I'm wrong, or one of you out there can correct me if I'm wrong at 412-928-9370. It felt like I was watching the same Colin Holderman from July and August, and it felt like I was watching the same David Bednar from 2024. I'm not saying that these guys can't come back and shove tonight if the Pirates are in the same situation. Maybe it's another multi-run lead, and there's an opportunity for Colin Holderman to enter the eighth inning, David Bednar in the ninth inning, and maybe those guys hold it down. Maybe it's six up and six down in their two innings of work. It could be that case. But what we saw yesterday was a scary sight. I thought it was a bit alarming. Holderman fell apart with two outs in the eighth, trying to hold a two-run lead. And then David Bednar didn't even record an out in the ninth inning. And I will get to the fielding mistakes, don't worry. Right now we are focused on the guys that were on the mound. I'm getting a bit tired of hearing, well, he threw great pitches, don't blame him. Don't blame them. In Bednar's case, he immediately got taken to the wall when Nick Fortes blasted it to right center. And again, I will get to the fielding in a bit, but it doesn't take away from the fact that the ball was taken nearly 400 feet. So maybe it was a good pitch. I don't know. Apparently it wasn't all that great to Nick Fortes, who had no problem taking it to the base of the right center field wall. I'm not a Major League Baseball player. Then Xavier Edwards was intentionally walked. And then the next batter was Kyle Stowers, and he hit the ball so hard it looked like it was shot out of a friggin' cannon. That looked like any of the hard-hit baseballs that we see from O'Neal Cruz or Ellie De La Cruz or really anybody in baseball. That ball was an absolute laser down the right field line. And yeah, I know it was barely fair. Well, the ball was still absolutely tattooed. But, it was a great pitch. Don't fault David. I'm probably not the first person to bring this up, but I feel like the conversation around David Bednar, who I think as a guy, I think he's a hell of a guy, that is separate from how things are going on the baseball field. The conversations would be a little bit different if he was from Missouri and not Mars. If he wasn't a guy from our backyard, I think the conversations would go a little differently. I mean, would you agree with that, or do you think I'm off base there?
No, 1,000%. Like, oh, we can't criticize David Bednar. He's a yinzer. We have this love affair. And look, I'm guilty of it at times too, where we want to bring people back to the city because, oh, they're from here. Or like, they would understand what we go through. And David Bednar, it's like, we can't criticize him, even though he had an awful spring training, but nobody wants to say it out loud. Everybody just wants to say, oh, he'll be fine. He'll figure it out. And then, a 6 ERA last year. Donnie, for me, first impressions can be lasting impressions, and I know it's one of 162, but I feel like I was watching the same thing that I watched over and over and over again last year, especially in Paul Skene's starts, to blow it yet again for that guy.
Yeah, and that doesn't help the narrative that people are looking at from the Paul Skene scope of things of, man, this guy will probably get pretty frustrated soon enough, and he would be the first, it seems, by the way of his attitude and what he has said and how he has spoken about his time in the majors, he would be the first guy, I would think, Skeens, that is, to say, you know, he wasn't perfect yesterday. He wasn't his dominant self. But a guy that leaves a game in the sixth to just see a three-run lead wilter away, that can't be a good feeling. And he got used to that at the back end of last season because of the back end of this bullpen, which picked up right where it left off. The fielding was also dire in key moments. And we will go back to that ninth inning. The O'Neill Cruz debacle, completely misplaying that Fortes fly ball. He also failed to hit a cutoff man in an important spot earlier in the game. We knew it would not be a clean transition for O'Neill Cruz in center field. I think we were all just hoping that it would go better than what it did at shortstop. And that's not to say it can't. But you see moments like yesterday and you can immediately see the inexperience at the position oozing out of the player. He'll have his occasional flash. We saw it a few times late last season when they made that move. We saw it occasionally in spring training. And the man can move like a gazelle, so he can cover a lot of ground and he can make some difficult plays look not so difficult. I get that. I completely understand the idea of O'Neill Cruz, the center fielder. I'm not saying that it's a failure because of what happened yesterday. I'm just saying we should grow to expect this. We should be watching games and thinking, you know, we don't have a gold glove center fielder out there. This isn't Andrew McCutchen in his prime in center field. So we have to take the growing pains that there are with Cruz playing a completely new position, which, of course, they just tossed him right out there in the middle of last season, the latter stages of last season, like it wouldn't be that big of a transition. They did that with another player, too, and we know that this guy has somewhat of a background of first base. We have kind of wondered, really, why he hasn't played more at the position in his rehab stint. That's Endy Rodriguez. He had a gaffe at first base yesterday. And here is where I will blame the organization and not the player as much. Because like I just said, why did he not play first until the final days of spring training? Even if they want to say, well, we want to be sure he's going to make the team. We want to be sure of that. What argument is that? That's what spring training is for. No? Why wouldn't you have a player work there at least a little bit just in case you think you're going to play him there in a real game? And then in typical Pirates fashion, they make the kid play there on opening day and act as if he will pick it up like he's Keith Hernandez or Don Mattingly, guys that won a combined 20 gold gloves playing at first. Which, by the way, Limits, I'll test you on this one. Do you know who won the American League gold glove at first base last season?
Oh, man.
I was looking at this earlier.
Off the top of my head, was it Carlos Santana?
Yes, it was.
How about that?
Our buddy Carlos Santana.
He had a really good year with the Pirates defensively when he played here.
Yes, he did. That was a move, even though he's an older player. He was, you know, another guy that was mid to late 30s when they brought him in. The dude was very productive, I felt.
And that was
at least
one
for what he was here for.
It was a huge discussion during that season. Like, could Carlos Santana actually win a gold glove? And then he goes to Minnesota and then he does?
Yep. And now he's in Cleveland.
Man,
back where it
Cleveland.
All started. Carlos Santana was the AL gold glove winner at first base last season. But what they do with some of these guys in the field, it's just coaching and management malpractice to me. Like, think of a time where you've played a sport really at any level. It doesn't matter if it was a high level of college athletics or if it was in the pros. think of a time where you get thrown into a position and you aren't completely comfortable playing there. I mean, I can think of a few times. I'm sure that you out there listening can think of a few times. I'm sure that Austin can think of a few times. Like, you get thrown into a position when you were playing a sport, whether it's Little League or Major League, and if you've never played there before, you're a bit uncomfortable. And if you've never played there in a real meaningful moment, you are usually more prone to making mistakes. But what can we expect out of this group? Because out of nowhere, last season, like we said, they just moved O'Neal Cruz to center field. So why should we have expected them to help out Andy Rodriguez at first base? Really not get a true look at him there in the spring, and then in the final, not even full week, say, well, you know what, he might be our opening day first baseman. Oh, that sounds like a great plan. How much of first base did he play during the spring? We put him there for a game. Okay. We got two pass balls from Joey Bart yesterday, both happening in pretty meaningful spots. They're going to have to just live with that, unfortunately, unless they want to try and flip Bart to first base, because Rodriguez, the better defensive catcher, Bart not really known for his defense, but what he did with his bat last season, it's hard to take that away, because this is an offense that will need it. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa didn't have the cleanest game either, and that's a case of me being a little bit more frustrated with the player, because even though shortstop, it's not his usual home, the guy is a super utility man. The book on him is that he's pretty much good on defense anywhere you put him. So in this case, I would expect plus defense from a player like IKF, really wherever he's at on the diamond. But in his defense, I expect that he can clean it up more easily than some of the other guys. The offense was typical. 4 hits in the game. 11 strikeouts. It's not really an opening day if the Pirates don't strike out over 10 times. But they didn't make us worry on that. By the way, Andy Rodriguez, 3 strikeouts for him in the opener, so he was struggling on both ends. And we kind of see how that can tie in. If a guy is frustrated with how he is in the field, he performs in that manner, in that mentality at the plate, and vice versa. Brian Reynolds, he was the steady Eddie. He had the big first hit that gave the Pirates a 2-1 lead. Nick Gonzalez went yard, but then he had to exit the game after limping around the bases. So we got to see our old buddy Adam Frazier. No ABs for Adam Frazier, though, but he did get in the game. Noah Hiles, I heard him with the morning guys. He described the Gonzalez thing as a beat-up ankle, but hopefully that does not require an IL stint. Although, I mean, we'll see. I have my doubts that the lineup will be published by the time we are off air at 2 p.m. But I guess we can't be surprised if we see a Frazier start at second base tonight. So you could call it a typical Pirates loss. That's how they opened the 2025 season. Marlins 5, Pirates 4. A game the Pirates led by 3 runs when Paul Skenes exited the game. I want to hear from you out there. Let's vent. After game 1 of 162, did this change the course? Or is it par for the course for Pirates baseball? 412-928 9370. Let's get a few in here before we hit a break. James is in the South Hills. What's going on, James?
Hey, good morning, Donnie. Good job, buddy.
Thank you. Appreciate that. What's on your mind?
You know, the Pirates in ownership, especially in management, is ridiculous. So let me be ridiculous just for a second. I told Limits, I said, you know, maybe it's a good thing they lost the first game of the year. And he's like, why? I said, Well, the pressure's off now to go 162-0. So they can go 161-1.
They started red hot last season, too.
Right. Why not just move Paul Skeens to catcher, or maybe make him the DH and put Cruz behind the plate? I mean, just that's how ridiculous the Pirates are. I mean, they don't really deserve to be even almost analyzed. And, you know, it doesn't matter if you had Mickey Mouse as the manager. This ownership group and this set of people in charge, you know what? Let me just tell you one quick thing. I'm 57 years old, so I was 12 in 1979 when the Pirates were last in the World Series. Mm-hmm. And I was playing Little League Baseball at the time, you know. And I was in baseball heaven. It was nirvana. The Pirates were good every year. They were in the World Series. You know, and if somebody would have told me in 1979 that 45 years later, the Pirates would never even be in a World Series, let alone win one, I would have told them they were crazy. That would never happen. And by God, it did happen. Isn't it crazy?
And, James, I appreciate the call. What sucks there is that they haven't really come close. You could say 1992, so I'll pull that back for a second. But in my lifetime, in 30 years, I think I've given them a pretty good amount of time. Born in the mid-90s, I just missed out on those early 90s teams. They haven't come close. The biggest joy of my Pirates fandom was them winning a one-game wild card against the Cincinnati Reds in 2013. That's been it. That has been it. So it is very frustrating. 412-928-9370. Ross is in Greensburg. What's going on, Ross?
Hey, not too much. Hey, the level of frustration is just outrageous with this team. They're rudderless. Not only are they rudderless, their sails aren't even up on the ship. You have a manager in Derek Shelton who just appears to be John Russell Part 2 with a personality. I look at O'Neill Cruz, and I have flashbacks of Gregory Polanco, where you have an incredible amount of raw talent, but zero development, and a baseball IQ that rests around 60. I looked at that game yesterday, rewatched it, and almost have PTSD from the flashbacks from last year, especially when Skeens pitches. You have a generational talent that you're wasting. I talked to people like my father and grandfather who grew up in the 50s and 60s, and it's just reminiscent of Ralph Kiner. You have a generational talent, a superstar, with absolutely nothing around him.
Yeah, Ross, that's another good point, too, because Skeens, and people will bring up, like, hey, this guy's going to get pissed off pretty quickly. I can't speak for him, but it's human nature to be frustrated if you see your work go wasted, even if it's not your best day. It's not like we saw Paul Skeens exit the game after 6 one-hit innings. And after those 6 one-hit innings, we see the Pirates just completely crater. Now, we could see that. I'm sure over the course of 162 games, I'm sure we will see Paul Skeens take a no-hitter or a shutout into inning 6 or 7. And then once he gives up that one hit, we see the bullpen come in and blow it up. I'm not going to rule that out over the course of a 162-game schedule. Our six-pack, that's brought to you by Bet365. It's a good sound, especially on a Friday. Donnie Chedrick in for Pomp and Joe. Pomp not usually in on Fridays anyway. Joe on a golf course somewhere. He is in Florida, right? That's where he went?
He is, Donnie, minus football. No okay. Football for until August.
Yes, until August.
That's right. Joe makes such a huge deal of that.
Austin Bechtold with me behind the glass. Good show lined up for you. That's where you can come in, though, as well at 412-928-9370. Talking about the Buccos, game one of 2025, it felt more like game 163 of 2024. If you watch that game yesterday, just more of the same. More of the same in the frustrating spots. They couldn't get timely hits. They made mistakes defensively. The back end of the bullpen blew up. Same old song and dance. 412-928-9370. Mark in Fort Lauderdale. He was at the game yesterday. What's up, Mark?
It was a great atmosphere yesterday. I've been a Pirate fan since 68. My dad was an usher behind Clemente at Ford Field. And I saw I was there in 93 when Charlie Huff towed the rubber for the Marlins the first game. So I enjoy both clubs. The Pirates, obviously, number one, but the Marlins are 1A, and it was a great atmosphere. But I wanted to ask you, Donnie, it didn't look to me like Gonzalez is going to be able to play for a little bit. Do you think they're going to reach down to Nick York or Valdez, who had a great spring, or is Billy Cook a possibility? Who do you see coming up if they have to put Gonzalez on the IL? And the other thing is, tonight they're going to face the pitcher that was the best pitcher for the Marlins this spring, Connor Gillespie, a kid who, you know, had a great college career at Virginia Commonwealth, drafted by the Orioles, then but just didn't fit in with Cleveland's number situation. So I don't think it's going to be an easier task tonight.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not taking any of these games as easy, especially given what the Pirates have at the plate. I mean, it doesn't matter to me what pitcher they are really facing. I'm not going to view a single game as a game that the Pirates' offense will explode for 10-plus runs. When it comes to what will happen if Gonzalez has to go on the IL, I think Nick York would be the first name I would call. They have multiple options, though. This is an organization that if they don't have anything else besides pitching, they certainly have middle infielders that they can call upon when an injury takes place. But yeah, that's a little bit worrisome because Gonzalez had one of the few bright spots of yesterday and he gets hurt in the process. 412-928-9370. Mike is in Homestead. What's up, Mike?
Hey, how you guys doing this morning?
Good.
Man,
what do you got?
Well, let's put it this way. This about your first or second caller, I can absolutely relate. Also 57. I can remember in 79, watching Omar Marino catch that and win in the World Series. And little did I think that 50 years later, almost a half century, if you think about that, that we still would not have anything. The Pirates are getting exactly what they paid for, and that was nothing. Okay? This is exactly why year after year after year, oh, well, let's hope they bring him up. Let's hope that they do this. And they never do, you know, I'll get off after this. I'm just generalizing with all of the sports team in Pittsburgh. What has happened? Okay. You got the Fenway group. The Penguins have not made the playoffs. Do we need to even go anything about the Nuttings? And now the Steelers as well. If you think about it, has COVID eaten through their brain on making sound calls? Derek Shelton. Okay. I guarantee on any other Major League Baseball team, In all of Major League Baseball, what is his record since he's been a Pirate? He would be fired in any other organization. It begins at ownership. I'm tired as a Pirate fan, year after year, living on hope. You don't win games on hope. You have to hope that they make the right decision. If they're having to do that, my God, don't you think it's time for a change? But how do you make that change when you have an owner that refuses to do anything? I wish the league can intervene, to be honest with you. And I'll let you go.
Yeah, Mike, I think there's a lot of people that share that sentiment. If the league could intervene, that would be the best thing for the Pirates and their fans. You bring up Derek Shelton's record. Yeah, he would have been out of here on, I would say, pretty much any other club in baseball. He has a winning percentage of .415. That is one of the worst of the modern era. I've looked at this before, and we're only one game into 2025, and it, with a loss, did not get any better. I think it should have been time after last season. You could have had a clean break of Shelton and Charrington, who I think is also as big a problem as anybody, because for as much as people point to, well, we know Bob Nutting isn't giving him a lot to play with, He very rarely has pulled the correct strings when he does make some decisions. So I think there are issues at all three levels. Major ones. Obviously, the owner, a huge issue. But the GM and the manager are also not worthy of being in their positions for another season. But it looks like that's what we are going to have to deal with here. 412-928-9370. Rob is up next. What's going on, Rob?
I was going to say good morning, Mr. Chedrick, but it's more like a bummed out morning. same age group as the last couple callers, 79, I was 15. I guess we took it for granted, man. The Steelers were winning, you know, Super Bowls. Panthers were winning national championship. Pirates were winning World Series. And I guess we kind of had that kind of childhood where we thought this was going to go on forever. And it's just so sad. I mean, I got out of the car yesterday and got home, and, 4-1. And I did some things at home, and then I turned on the radio, and the game was still on. And I'm like, oh, this isn't good, because it should have been over. And then it was 4-4, and I'm like, don't blow it. And it was true. I mean, Bednar is washed. I don't know what the hell they're thinking. He's done. He's done. I don't know whether it's just because he's a Pittsburgh guy or what, why they keep rolling him out there. He's done. I hate to say it. Goodbye.
Yeah, Rob, we had that conversation a little bit earlier. I do wonder, you have to wonder, it's only fair to wonder, as ridiculous or as silly as it sounds, would the conversations and would the moves with that player be different if he wasn't from Pittsburgh? Or really a town right next to us? You know, if I was in the major leagues or Austin was in the major leagues and we played for the Pirates, would it be treated, like, how would it be treated because we are Pittsburgh guys? I feel like that's a real conversation that we have to have about Bednar. Like, the treatment of him would be different if he was not from Mars, if he was not a Western Pennsylvania kid. And again, I think he's a hell of a dude personally, but it's fair to be really concerned with how he has played last season, this spring, and now to start 2025.
It's really concerning because this is starting to become a pattern, Donnie. And when it's this long of a prolonged period, and I feel like some of those same faults could be thrown at Colin Holderman too. And I think he gets a decent amount of criticism, and I think that that will continue to grow. And we've seen previous relievers for the Pirates kind of get crushed because of just a lack of success. I do think that people are hesitant, though, to rip Bednar. Just maybe they will sound, and look, I like the guy too. I love what he represents. I love that he's a Yinzer just like the rest of us. There's no denying that. But if you're just, you know, trying to take the emotion out of it, and you're just talking from a pure baseball perspective, he has not been good enough to be the closer of this team. And, like, I don't know about you, but when they were in the seventh inning, it's a 2-run game, and then you see, all right, here comes Holderman, here comes Bednar, I was immediately holding my breath, and it's game number one, just because of what we've seen over the past year, and that neither of them, I mean, Holderman had an okay spring, neither of them really proved that those yips or jitters, whatever you want to call it, they've moved past it.
50-minute mark on the Fan. That's brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram on Route 19 in Peters Township. And to that point, we are holding our breath on game one. Game one. And we knew, too, because leading up to it, really even up to the game, I know that in the scrum yesterday, Jason Mackey questioned Derek Shelton, hey, if the Pirates have the lead in the ninth inning, or it's a tie in the ninth inning, are we going to see David Bednar? And Shelton said, I don't know. He said that pretty much all spring, that he didn't come right out and say that David Bednar would be the team's closer, that he would be the guy that you see in the highest of high leverage situations. And he's 0-for-1. He failed his very first assignment in this case. Listen to the Pomp and Joe show every Wednesday to hear about Starkey's Card of the Week from the Baseball Card Castle in Cranberry. Contests run every Wednesday through Friday at 12 noon at the 937thefan.com contesting page. 412 928-9370. Michael in Monroeville. What's going on, Michael?
Not much. Thanks for taking my call, Donnie. And frankly, also, congratulations on your engagement.
Oh, thank you.
Good time. So I guess the definition of insanity, right, is doing the same thing, expecting different results. I don't know why I was optimistic going into game one yesterday, especially after a 4-1 lead. But especially with O'Neill Cruz, one of my things, and I don't pretend to know baseball as well as I probably should, but isn't it to be great, you know, basketball players, if they want to be great shooters, they're taking 100 free throw shots every day, right? What in the offseason could O'Neill Cruz have done other than maybe Dominican ball? Like, doesn't he have somebody that could give him situational or situations and hit fly balls to him? Like, give him position. Like, what do they do for the 4 or 5 months when the season's over? You know, I don't pretend to know that, but, you know, I remember as Keener League, you know, like, I would catch 50 fly balls in practice. You know, or stay late, go early. Like, some of this is on, I think, O'Neill, but also with Derek Shelton, I mean, it's just very bad management, you know, and Endy's the same way. You know, you don't put Endy at first base in the last preseason game and expect him to, you know, go back to college days where he knows first base.
Yeah, Michael, and to what you're saying there, those guys have some experience playing the, you know, the positions they are now at. But it is just so minimal in the grand scheme of things. You know, O'Neill Cruz dating all the way back, his whole organizational makeup of where he has played defensively. He has well over 200 innings in the outfield. If you recall, they had him experiment with that when he was in the minor leagues. You know, they even had him experiment with that, not in a game setting, but at least in batting practice and such when he was on the major league roster. They pulled the trigger last season. They put him out there in center field. Endy Rodriguez, he has over 300 innings in his life at first base. But I still think it's different when it's guys that are there. It's a spot where they haven't played there in a while, or they're just not used to playing there. Like, that was the case with Endy yesterday. Okay, the guy has played first before, but it's been a while. He had a major injury that he's recovering from. And now, well, okay, we didn't play him really there at all in the spring, and now we're ready to toss him right in there on opening day? That's just a tough sell for me.